Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:14 Pacific Summer Time, and well, today is Friday, so it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes, but well, also Halloween, well, happy Halloween, and well, considering that this is the day for trick-or-treat, it would look like the Bank of Japan has handed us a treat. Well, what they've we've been waiting for it for a while. They've certainly been on in the pipeline that the health minister is the guy that's in charge of the largest pension fund in the world, and that their massive overweight position in JGBs is about to be unwound. That the Bank of Japan is right there, standing ready to buy just about any amount of paper that the government is the Treasury of Japan is going to print, but that the largest pension fund in the world is going to raise its weighting of equities quite substantially, that it could actually double its weighting in equities. Well, that represents hundreds of billions of dollars, or if you want to go to yen, trillions of yen, potentially moving into the stock markets. Well, the Nikkei was up today by about 4.8%. It's breaking up out of what's been an 18-month range. Well, this is a reassertion of Abenomics, of concerted weakness for the yen, and it's a very, very big deal. Well, considering the fact that this is also happening at the same time, really only 3 days after the Fed decided that it was no longer going to purchase additional supplies of treasuries and mortgage bonds. Well, as the Fed has signaled that it is winding down its quantitative easing program, well, considering that the Fed is by far the largest central bank, that it has by far the largest, well, let's call it a center of gravity in terms of the influence which it exerts on the wider economy, that it moving to a neutral stance in terms of its purchases, well, that pushes the responsibility for reflating their own economies onto the respective governments that have benefited from the Fed's largesse. So it's no mistake, it's no coincidence that the ECB has signaled in no uncertain terms that it is going to increase the size of its balance sheet by an additional trillion euros. Well, it unwound the LTRO program completely. The last major program that we had in Europe, in the Eurozone, was for also about a trillion euros that was totally unwound over the last 2 years. Well, there are some non-trivial deflationary forces at work within the Eurozone economy, and those are being exacerbated by the sanctions that have been imposed on Russia, which, for better or worse, is a major trading partner for the Eurozone. Well, that means that they're just going to have to start to print, regardless of the fact that it's going to be combated in the courts by various Austrian school type people in Germany in particular. The ECB has no impediment in terms of its single, it really only has one mandate, and that is to seek an inflation target of 2%, and they are a long way from that. So there isn't really any inflationary impediment to them increasing the money supply by the stated amount. Well, Japan has really bet the farm on seeking inflation by going after the quantitative easing, by weakening the yen, printing additional bonds, buying them up, and really just going after inflation by any means necessary. Well, they're going to need additional reforms as well. But the fact that they are now stimulating once more is, it just dusts off the yen carry trade playbook that's sort of been on hold for the last 2 years. It means that the yen is going to get weaker, not least against the dollar, but against a number of other currencies, that yield plays are going to become that bit more appetizing. Well, New Zealand was a nice destination for a lot of those yen carry trade flows in the last decade, and, well, they've just had an important election in New Zealand, and the stock market is looking to outperform. It wouldn't be at all surprising, and not least because you're seeing some of these high yield utility shares breaking up out of bases, that they could start to see flows from a depreciating yen into higher yielding asset plays. Well, when you have a weaker yen and you have a weaker euro, you have the Chinese economy, which has really been pressured by the central banks and the government's efforts to pressure the property market. Well, they have curtailed the expansion of the property bull market, but they really do have to now turn around and start to ease up on some of that pressure to open up the economy and allow additional funds to flow in if they're going to avoid a crash in terms of the property market. Well, they know that as well as anybody else, and what we're seeing is that they're doing exactly that. That the restrictions that have been imposed on the property sector are being let up on, and that, with the creation of the free trade zone in Shanghai last year, that they are looking at ways to encourage additional foreign investment and into the capital markets. Well, the connection between Shanghai and Hong Kong stock exchanges has been, on hold, probably because it takes time to get the regulatory stuff in place, but also because of the political tensions in Hong Kong. But, it's worth pointing out that the A-share market has been up for three consecutive days and broke out today to a new recovery high. The Hang Seng is up by an additional percent and a quarter in here, but it has found support at a progressively higher level. The progression of higher reaction lows within this five-year range that has been going for the last 3 years is still intact, and, you'd have to give the benefit of the doubt to additional upside in here. Well, these are major, major moves. That what you're seeing is that we're still in an extraordinarily accommodative environment, that we're in a globalized economy. And, considering that it is a global economy, that money created in one jurisdiction doesn't necessarily stay there. Well, because the dollar is strengthening, this has been that's going to be a headwind for the earnings of a number of the autonomies that are listed there, but also that it's worth considering that the strength of the US dollar makes the US a pretty favorable destination for foreign flows. Well, when you look at the various regions in terms of their currency adjusted performance, then what you're seeing this year is that Europe is lagging by a long way. Well, you see that the Italian index was up by 3% today, the Spanish index was up by 2%, but the euro was weaker by 80 ticks. Well, that's when you look at the S&P 500, it was up 0.86%, but the dollar would have been up 80 ticks, so that would have flattered the total return from the perspective of a non-US dollar denominated investor. Well, that certainly helped to push a number of these markets up to new high ground. Well, Brazil, having had that not so favorable election result last week, has steadied up, and it was up by 4% in here today. Well, that's not least because Dilma Rousseff has committed herself to adopting a reform agenda. Well, we'll see whether she imposes it or not, but the market has at least steadied in here. Well, when you think about it over the medium to long term, that whereas you're seeing that U.S. monetary policy is normalizing, and it's normalizing from what we can consider to be a very benign scenario, that we haven't had deflation, and inflation, on the other hand, inflation is pretty moderate, that unemployment figures are improving, that participation hasn't been up to par, but that needn't necessarily always be the case. And, I'm posting a chart later when I post my copy of wages. and wages are starting to turn upwards. Well, wages turning upwards improves participation, but it also starts to feed through into core inflation, which is really the only thing that the Fed looks at. Well, it suggests that the likelihood of the Fed adopting another round of quantitative easing has been removed in here, that we're seeing other central banks moving into a much more lax position. Well, you can't have a bull market without liquidity, and there's just no shortage of liquidity right now. That the Bank of Japan moving to an outright stimulus environment is just an additional shot of fuel into this bull market. It's a liquidity-fueled bull market. It's been like that since 2009, and with major central banks becoming more activist, and not least Japan and Europe, that there's going to be no shortage of liquidity in here. When if you're talking about the euro, it's a trillion euros, and, well, Japan's program is pretty much open-ended. Well, when we see that we have when overbought conditions develop, that where you're likely to get pullbacks, we've just had one of those. Well, the short-term oversold condition has been replaced by a short-term overbought condition. This additional monetary stimulus is probably going to add a little bit more fuel to the fire in here. Well, what you are starting to see is that big cap growth stocks are accelerating higher, that the pace of their respective advances has really picked up. Well, that's where you're getting the big momentum trades moving in here right now. Well, when you start to think about this over the short term, that it's quite positive, but it's getting a bit racy. Over the medium term, well, we've had this 5-year bull market, and it's not over. And we'll know what it looks like when it does end. Well, these markets either roll over and move into a much more choppy environment, or they accelerate higher, which just extends creates this massive overextension relative to the 200-day moving average, and increases the likelihood that there could be an equally violent reaction back towards it. Well, what we are seeing, particularly in biotech, is that about half of the large caps have just powered through to new highs in the last week, and that an increasing number of others are also turning the corner and starting to push up once more. Well, when you think about this in the long term, that Wall Street has broken up out of a very lengthy period of consolidation. Well, these long periods of consolidation are, well, we define them at the chart seminar as explosions waiting to happen. Well, this is, under any way you want to describe it, is a massive explosion out of a very long range. Well, the bigger the range, the bigger the explosion, because the longer time that goes past, the lower expectations for future potential get. Well, people's perceptions of what future potential might be are starting to improve. Well, we can look at the Dow gold ratio. Well, gold broke downwards today to the lowest level it's been since 2011. Well, it's been ranging above 1180 for the last year and a half, and is around 1170 as I speak right now. Well, that's about $10 off the low, but it's going to have to do a lot more than that to post a failed downside break. Well, when you look at the Dow gold ratio, well, that ratio bottomed in 2011. Well, that represented the peak in gold, and well, the Dow Jones hasn't really looked back. It's continued to improve in here. Well, it's just the Dow Jones is loaded up with autonomies, the types of companies that are going to do well from the rise of the global middle class, and continuing to, well, the kinds of companies that have got truly global franchises. And in a global economy with global liquidity, global companies are the ones that are likely to do well. Well, with that type of environment, is there the need? There might be the desire, there might be the trading opportunity, but is there the need to have an overweight position in gold? Well, what you're seeing is that the ETF holdings of gold continue to trend lower. Now, the pace of that decline has moderated a lot, but it is still going down. It suggests that the types of people that were willing to give the benefit of the doubt to gold, that we're willing to buy on reactions, aren't in that market anymore. Well, they're probably looking at the stock market and thinking that this is something that they should be starting to think about, that we've had this massive breakout, and so far it continues to go up. Well, we know that eventually it is going to roll over, it's going to go into a much more difficult environment, but in all likelihood, the breakout is going to hold, and that we are in a new bull market environment, and that could persist for really quite a lengthy period of time. And we're talking more decades than years. Well, that could be fueled by massive technological innovation, not least in the consumer electronics, but also in industrial processes, that additive manufacturing and the miniaturization of sensors and the Internet of Everything are creating these productivity gains that were just not possible previously. Well, advances in robotics and optics, together with those other advances, are also just incredibly important. That these are the kinds of things on which, well, just individually, that a bull market could be predicated on, but that we're getting them all happening at the same time, and that one is helping the other. Well, this is just indicative of an accelerating pace of technological innovation, that an accelerating at an exponential rate. Well, a good example of that is in the just in the commentary with relating to fusion energy. Well, from about the 1950s, it was always 25 years away. Well, we don't have one yet, but you have people like, the University of, I think it's Minnesota. There's also, you know, major defense contractors starting to talk about it being 5 years away. Well, obviously, the proof will be in the pudding, that we really do have to wait until we see one of these things, but that the expectations of how achievable it is are improving all the time. Again, this is just an exponential pace of technological innovation. Well, it means that the price war that is going on between Saudi Arabia and some of its more recalcitrant OPEC partners isn't about to go away anytime soon, but that this $80 area is at least an area of short-term support. But, well, there's been the distinct absence of upward dynamics for the oil price, and, well, that would suggest that we're going to need a bit more evidence to confirm that this $80 area is going to hold. Well, when you look at the commodity sector more broadly, that if you are thinking that there is going to be a stronger dollar environment, well, there's obviously two ways of thinking about that. Do you think about the strong dollar in terms of its purchasing power? Well, there's little prospect of the purchasing power increasing to any measurable degree. But when just about every other major central bank is attempting to weaken their respective currencies, well, just by virtue of the fact that the Fed is moving towards a more normalized environment, or at least a more neutral environment, is brings it to the top of the pile. Well, considering that most commodities are denominated in dollars, it would suggest that there's going to be at least some downward pressure on them, but also that, well, you've had just about every central investment bank closing their desk and selling off their warehousing, that you just do not have the same speculative interest in the commodity sector that you used to have. Well, you know, the inverse correlation between commodities and the dollar is often exaggerated. But when you have, you know, the participation within the market starting to deteriorate, well, then that is something that isn't just a short-term phenomenon. Well, nevertheless, if you look on a deep, well, a large overextension relative to a trend mean like the 200-day moving average, when you've had an upward acceleration as potentially something that you need to be cautious about, well, when you have an acceleration to the downside that is becoming increasingly overextended, well, then you have to start being cautious about becoming overly bearish. Well, you're certainly seeing that kind of acceleration lower in the oil services stocks. Well, it's been our view for at least the last 4 or 5 years that we would anticipate that oil prices would trend lower in real terms, because of the total game-changing nature of unconventional oil and gas, and not least shale, in the US. Well, the fact that the technology in that area is also improving at an exponential rate suggests that there's going to be plenty of supply. Well, just like any other major commodity bull market, you get huge investment in additional new supply, and that new supply is coming online. Well, not least in Brazil, where Petrobras had, well, I think it produced about 500,000 barrels from the Tupi field last year, and it's going to be over 1 million barrels within the next few months. So, well, doesn't matter what happens to the oil price, that supply is coming online. And, well, again, it doesn't matter what happens to the oil price, that once it comes online, they have to continue to pump, because they need to pay down the amount of debt that they have incurred to build out the supply in the first place. One of the problems for a lot of the commodity stocks is that the demand growth forecasts on which they predicated their massive spending on expansion are not panning out. Well, this couldn't be happening at a better time for India. If oil prices are weak, well, it's the consumers do particularly well. And, well, India has got this massive subsidy that it continues to pay out for oil. Well, lower oil prices reduce that subsidy. It means that the central bank will be able to, inflationary pressures will come down, and the central bank will be able to cut interest rates. It should help to steady up the currency. And, well, it also gives the Modi government a little more room to play with. Well, at least that's part of the reason that the Nifty index is continuing to push on to new high ground. Well, it's a little bit overbought in the short term, but when you look at this over the last 10 years, it has done nothing for over 5 years. There's a lot underneath this market, and it's being led higher by the banking sector. Well, India has just got these incredibly favorable demographics. Well, that doesn't, well, when you think about demographics, that a population of 1.25 billion, 600 million of those people are under the age of 25. That there were 120 million new voters at the last election. Well, they're voting for change. And, well, what they've got now is a new administration that is, well, knows that its survival will be tied to its ability to deliver on the kinds of reforms that will lift even more people out of poverty and into the middle classes, and will give people a path to prosperity. Well, the degree to which they can achieve that will have a large impact on just how well the stock market does. But, well, the signs are pretty good so far. And, well, if India can succeed in developing its East Asian growth model and developing a vibrant manufacturing sector, you'd have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And this market could double. Well, the Japanese market, which has been just moribund for such a long time, is benefiting enormously in nominal terms from the devaluation of the currency, which had been just too strong. That the Chinese market, which has been really laboring under the tight monetary policy that the People's Bank of China has imposed, is looking like it's getting out of the starting blocks. Well, when you start to think about this over the long term, that you're seeing the major population centers doing well, that after just an incredibly difficult period that the USA in particular has taken the write-offs in, at least in the banking sector, and is coming out of that just very difficult environment in a benign way. Well, Europe just hasn't had the political apparatus to deal with the problems that it has, and, well, in nominal terms, the stock market could still go higher because of the devaluation of the currency. And also because, well, the fact that the ECB removed €1 trillion from the system is just outright deflationary. And, well, putting it back in could be reflationary. So you're going to see, well, a likelihood that the stock market will also appreciate in nominal terms. but from the perspective of a total return investor, that the Chinese currency is still really very steady, and it looks like that the stock market is appreciating, that the reforms that are being imposed in India right now, well, they certainly don't want a strong currency, but that the rupee has been, by contrast, it has been very steady over the last few months. And, well, the fact that the US dollar is, well, turning the corner, well, it's also worth highlighting the fact that the dollar has been among the weakest currencies in the world for the last 10 years. Well, by any kind of historical measure, it's pretty weak. Well, you can look at a number of emerging market currencies and see how strong they are. Well, you can't talk about a strong currency without also comparing it to a weak currency. And, well, the dollar has been particularly weak. Well, it means that the kinds of investors that will be looking for capital market and currency market appreciation are presented with some really very interesting potential in here right now. That the kind of way that people have been thinking about the energy markets for the last decade is beginning to change. That well, people had just accepted that we were going to have this high energy price indefinitely. Well, natural gas is still below $4. That the argument for switching out of just about anything else and into natural gas is still a point that's well made. That, well, there's just no shortage of oil right now. That the fact that the US has developed this technology to exploit unconventional reserves is just a game changer for the energy sector. It means that we're going to have volatility in the oil markets, such as it always been, but that the threat of additional spikes to the upside is getting increasingly distant. Well, that's really just a major boost for the global economy. Well, when you have lower average energy prices and the kind of governance that is improving and allowing just hundreds of millions of people, and indeed billions of people, to reach their productive capacity, and in an environment where the pace of technological innovation is accelerating and that the availability of that technology is expanding, well, then you have the potential for really quite a spectacular bull market. Well, in that kind of benign environment, what you're seeing in here today is that treasuries were about 20 ticks lower. Well, you certainly haven't had an accelerated move out of treasuries. That it's still one of the best performing asset classes this year. Well, what it is doing right now is unwinding that surge into bonds that we had when we had that, I guess it was a 10-day pullback in the middle of this month. Well, in the benign environment where the Fed is in a neutral stance and where the dollar is firming up, there isn't really the need to raise interest rates just now, because the firming dollar will help to do some of that work for it. But that, and also will make US Treasuries more attractive. But that there isn't the tailwind from additional purchases. Well, the Fed could do exactly what the Bank of England has been doing and reinvesting its coupons and reinvesting its maturing debt so that the size of the balance sheet remains stable. Well, you're not going to have any kind of downward pressure on profit erosion for people unless you start to see a major spike in yields. Well, we're just not getting that right now, that we're getting an unwind of an overbought condition, that that the total return on US Treasuries broke out to a new all-time high 3 weeks ago. It's unwinding the overbought condition, but that you'd be looking at that 1900 point level on the index for a sign that a Type 3 top has been completed. And, well, just right now, it just isn't happening. You'd have to anticipate that that might well happen at some point in future, but that right now we're in a pretty benign type of environment. Well, I think with that, I will leave you for today and the weekend, and wish all the best to all of you.